Moving on to IFRS 15, agenda paper 8. Craig?
Yep. Okay.
Put the magic touch this one.
Okay. Agenda paper 8 is where the application of IFRS 15 by an airline when it is obliged to compensate customers for delayed or cancelled flights. Legislation stipulates customers' rights to receive compensation. The submitter asks where the entity accounts for its obligation to compensate customers as described in the submission, either as part of the transaction price or as an obligation accounted for applying IAS 37. The main facts of the submission are presented in paragraphs 5 to 9 of the paper. Paragraphs 12 to 14 of our paper discuss the terms of the contract. Analyse the submitter's questions in paragraphs 15 to 32 of the paper. A similar question arises in relation to compensation for delayed, lost, or damaged baggage, which is discussed in paragraphs 33 and 34 of the paper. In our view, compensation for flight delays or cancellations is part of the transaction price and variable consideration in the contract. Question 1 on page 9 of the paper asks whether the committee agrees with our analysis of the requirements in IFRS 15.
So I think the key paragraph is paragraph 14. And there are two sentences describing the fact pattern. Stating notably, similarly, in the facts described in the submission, the entity considers the customer's right to compensation to be part of the contract with the customer. The contract, and then the last sentence of this same paragraph is, the contract incorporates the enforceable right under the law, regardless of whether the contract with the customer explicitly refers to the legislation. So, I mean, because of those two sentences, notably, and the fact pattern described in the request, I think we enter again into what we have already dealt with, not in similar questions, but we have already treated in this committee the interaction between the law or a court decision on the execution of a contract, saying that it's part of the contract. And so, if it's effectively part of the contract, then I fully agree with the staff analysis and conclusion that effectively the compensation needs to be dealt with using the provisions of IFRS 15 contra revenue. Then I was just regretting that you had not specifically dealt with the issue of what about if a compensation exceeds the initial revenue recognized. I think you explicitly, effectively asked the question, but you did not provide any answer or any analysis in this. With the words currently contained in the draft tentative agenda decision, I understand that it would be implicitly, the answer is implicit. It's still contrary new, but I think maybe it would have been worthwhile considering specifically the question, but eluding it just for the sake of clarity, I think.
Yeah, first of all, for me, the question. The compensation, is that part of the contract between the supplier and the customer or not? Or is it something which is necessary due to legislation? And we see that this is necessary due to legislation, as depending on the jurisdiction, this might differ. We have certain rules in the European Union, they might be different in the US and so on. Second thing is, for what does it compensate? It can be a bunch of topics. It is not just a flat rate amount. It can be a flat rate amount, but it could also be for example for hotel fees, for drinks, and for phone calls or whatever. So a completely different set of say, deliverables, so to say, or purchased goods than within the original contract. So the question is based on IFRS 1570, whether this might be distinct or not. And secondly, the question of B, I guess it's B33, where it is said, okay, if this is something which is compensated due to legislation, then it might be expense and not be a deduction of revenue recognition. So I have significant concerns to interpret this in any cases as a reduction of revenue. As said, there is no specific correlation to the original sold performance. So, having not more facts and circumstances, I really have some doubt that this works out in any case. And specifically, as we have IFRS 15B33, which more or less was written with the intent really to say if there is a legislation around and which is not explicitly out of the supplier-customer relationship, then this is has to be this kind of cost has to be handled as expenses. So I do not follow the view of the staff. That could be it could be a view, but that would not be my view and not my interpretation of the account standards.
I'd like some clarification. I'm confused on part of the analysis. And in the agenda decision, it's the sentence that on the third to last paragraph, talking about compensation for delays or cancellation, does not represent compensation for harm or damages caused by the entity's products, as described in paragraph B33. And I'm curious if the emphasis there that it's not under B33 because the entity doesn't have a product, the harm or damage was caused by a service, or because there is no harm or damage, or there is no linkage between the delay and harm. So because there's not that linkage, then I'm not in B33.
So I suppose I'll start on Henry to add to this, but I think my understanding is that the board developed B33 with a particular, I'll say, narrow scope, but then Henry can add to that. And if you read the basis for conclusions, that supports it as well. It sort of explains what the board had in mind was sort of product liability law. So I think that the opening words talk about a law, which is right back to Martin's point, legislation, that it requires an entity to pay compensation if its products cause harm or damage. That does not give rise to a performance obligation. So I think all of those words are important. It's law, it's products causing harm or damage, thinking about product, you know, liability legislation. And I think that, I suppose, what we're trying to explain in that paragraph and what we do in the paper is trying to help to say, you know, the question in this situation is, do you consider any compensation that's paid here for delays or cancellation to be kind of part of the contract between you and the customer that might, you know, affect your transaction price? Or is it something separate, sort of not part of what the customer is paying, you know, the entity for the promised goods or services in a sense, but is something that happens where the entity might have to pay the customer, you know, some form of compensation. So is it something like kind of directly related to the entity's performance in delivering the promised goods or services? And in this case, we're saying what happens with a delay or cancellation is that the entity doesn't actually in that situation perform as promised. It doesn't transfer the promised goods or service in the contract with the customer, and therefore any compensation it might have to pay for that is an embedded part of that transaction between the entity and the customer for those promised goods or services. And so it's treated as part of the transaction price. Versus something that says as part of me, you know, delivering some promised goods or services almost separately, I cause, you know, the my product to what I'm doing cause some harm or damage that's sort of not directly related to the performance under the contract.
So if the airline was to injure somebody, is that then variable consideration, because you could say then that, well, there's a, by law, you're not supposed to injure somebody. So that could be then part of the contract. And therefore, variable consideration, because the way I was looking at it is B-33 doesn't apply because there is no linkage between the delay and cancellation, because I don't know exactly the facts, but it is you get compensated an amount. You don't have to prove that you were harmed or not. And so, to me, that's what causes this to be, you know, variable consideration, not within B-33 and harm. But I don't think that's clear in the agenda decision.
Sorry, Bob, what would you want it to say to make it
exactly clear? That there is no direct correlation linkage between the delay and harm, because they don't have to prove that they were harmed in order to receive the compensation.
I suppose I'm just wondering, I mean, we tried to word it very strictly as worded in B-33, so I'm just on. I mean, you're almost, I think, maybe asking for more explanation when we say it doesn't represent compensation for harm or damage caused by the product. I think you're, maybe what you're suggesting is you'd want a bit more explanation around that to say.
We'd linked it into the performance and then for variable consideration, saying it's linked into the promise, the performance obligation. But we were answering the question to say why it's not covered by B-33, and I very much echo with what Trina said about B-33, and I think she's saying exactly what the basis for conclusion supporting that is because it's sort of saying that's talking about B-33 is dealing with a situation which is really separate to the promise and the contract, and this compensation for the delay is all about the promise in the contract, if you've accepted that the legislation becomes part of that promise in the contract.
What I'm concerned about is, and maybe you need, well, this is the words in B-33, which I think is a little unfortunate, but somebody can read this, and it's been pointed out to me that you could put the emphasis on here on it's caused by the entity's products, and because the airline doesn't have a product, which I don't think is the right answer, that it's out.
Yeah. Mary, do you want to?
I did want to come in on kind of on the question Bob is asking and goes back to Martin's comment, which is to ask the staff, and maybe it's think about it for a minute, let somebody else comment, is whether there's a need to differentiate between if it's more delayed more than X, you get a payment, you know, statutory payment. You're entitled to compensation for delay. That, you know, and I think that's what's in mind and what's written here. And as Martin pointed out, as someone who's suffered from the delays, there are things that that an airline or a train line will reimburse if you can demonstrate that you incurred X cost related to the delay. And in that case, is that a different fact where it's the reimbursement of an expense that you suffered as a result of the delay? Is that a different kind? Because I can see where if it's more delayed more than X, you're entitled to Y amount, and you don't have to prove that you incurred expenses or, you know, something that some might regard as harm. But to me, it's not enough to say, well, the intent is to compensate you for anything that you might incur. It has to be those incremental things that it's only if you can produce receipts and submit them that you then get reimbursed that might be the different fact pattern. So I hadn't thought of that difference until Martin made that.
I read like this. And probably as to add on, you mentioned about the airline industry, and for sure this is examples of the airline industry, but also the railroad industry also, so there are many other areas where this could apply.
But
for
two
me,
kinds.
The question is why the legislator has more or less ruled that law, because this is not something which is offered on a voluntarily basis by the airline industry. It is just to minimize the number of lawsuits, because many people
lawsuits. Lawsuits.
Many people in former times have to claim their harm because of the delayed flights. And on the other hand, for sure, also to discipline the airlines. So as said, for me, the question is it a direct link between a promised good provided by the supplier and the customer, or is it something which should compensate for, and again, we are on the discussion, what do we mean by harm, and what is the law for of the European Union? Is it to compensate for harm or not? And this is a challenging question, and therefore I said...
I think then you're asking whether there are three buckets. Personally, yeah. I don't agree, but I think you're saying there are the three buckets. One, a straight penalty.
Yeah, as well.
If X happens, then you get paid Y. Then the second is... a penalty where there's an express intent of those who impose the penalty so that it's intended to compensate you for any costs you might incur. And then the third bucket is reimbursement. You know, it may be legislation but that forces you to do this, but legislation of specific costs incurred because of the delay or cancellation, but only if you can demonstrate that you incurred. Those are the three buckets maybe you're seeing.
It's on top, yeah.
I think what I will only say this of thinking up other fact patterns where there might be have to be compensation or penalties or rebates or whatever, all that list of stuff that IFRS 15 contemplates. And I'll only say that it's quite hard to, and I think it's quite dangerous to speak off the cuff then about those other situations that we haven't analysed. At least we were asked a specific question here about this particular legislation.
I guess just to channel the committee members who I've heard speaking so far, I think some are asking whether the reason why or what sits behind this conclusion is that this harm notion needs to come with some of, you need to show I've got something, proof, the sort of notion of proof, or whether it's actually... fine if it's just, or it has to just be this different type, which isn't just an automatic, if the flight's delayed, you get this amount. Is that something that's relevant to the conclusion that's being reached? Because even if you're in a different fact pattern, people are going to read it, pick it up and read it in a different context.
If it's written broadly, then it would be read as applying to more fact patterns than were considered when this was
Make
drafted.
Make sure it's not taken out of context inappropriately.
Okay. Rather than please address those others.
Yeah. Rather than trying to answer five other questions, yeah. I think we're just trying to be clear how the words have been applied
to this fact pattern. The question is that we've explained that any compensation for delays or cancellations relates directly to the entity's performance obligation, and then contrasted with the words in B30C and said, therefore, it's not that. And so then the question is whether we think we need something more than those words to explain.
Maybe to answer Bob, what this transfer of control notion that is now in IFRS 15, it means that, so first you need to assess whether you as a seller has transferred risk and rewards the way it was written in IS 18 before. But now, on top of that, you need to assess whether the customer, your customer, has taken control of the goods and services you promised him. So what have you promised? You have promised to the customer what is the combination of the contract and the law. You have not promised to the customer to transport the customer from point A to point B. You have promised the customer to transport him from point A, departure 8 o'clock, 8 a.m., and to point B, arrival hour, noon. And effectively, if in accordance to the law you have exceeded by X hours the arrival hour, then the customer is entitled to a compensation that just demonstrate what? That just demonstrate that you have not delivered what you have promised. So you have also to analyze, and we have already commented on that in this committee, notably for the Brazilian issue, for instance, you have to assess so what you have transferred to the customer, but what has really the customer accepted you transport, what has the customer really acquired from you. So there is some form of bijectivity here, and I think this is quite pretty objective. So is by the law the customer is entitled to a promise that commits the entity to provide a specific arrival hour, then it's part of the contract and needs to be analyzed in accordance with IFRS 15. I think that refers to my previous comment.
Oh.
It's part of the promise, actually. All
right, thanks.
Bob wasn't finished.
No, I have another point. You want me to come back later?
No, you can keep going. Sorry, Carl. You're next.
My second point was regarding, somebody mentioned it before, negative consideration. I was hoping that we could put within the scope, state explicitly in the scope of this agenda decision, that we are not dealing with, not addressing situations in which the compensation is greater than the total consideration. I think that's got other issues that we don't want to get into in this.
Yeah. Okay. So I think you're right. So what I'd say is we are dealing with those fact patterns, but we're not concluding upon the outcome of the accounting. So you know what I mean, Bob? This incorporates situations where the compensation might be more than the consideration, but we're just not.
I agree with you, but I'd like to be able to explicitly state that.
Yeah.
Okay, Carl.
I'm comfortable where staff has got. I followed the logic very easily. I think it's based on very good logic. just a small suggestion in the word of the last sentence of the first paragraph of page 12. The compensation gives rise to variable consideration the same way that penalties for delayed transfer of construction service. Mm-hmm. I think it's unnecessary. It's a different sector, different fact pattern. I'm even not sure if it works like this way. So my advice would be to delete this sentence to not bring more questions and more confusion and unnecessary. HR. I believe it's unnecessary. Otherwise, I agree with all the analysis and the wording.
Okay. Young Su?
Just like others, I'm also confused about understanding the paragraph B33. as Petrina says, I don't know how broad or how narrow homework damage means in B33. Petrina once said that, you know, when we think about the variable compensation, variable payment, we have to think about what is included in the transaction price. And I think when a company or airline is determining transaction price, the airline would also think about the possible damages done to their customers, like injuries of the customers. So injuries of the customers may be a realm of B33, but it is also included in the transaction price. So in that way, I do not know, you know, what that B33 really means and how we can distinguish provisions from the variable payment. That is a very much subjective decision, and I don't know whether we can, you know, say as clearly as the staff says in the agenda decision. So that is the first concern, I think. I mean, my concern is the same as the others. And the other one is about the cancelled flight. And we are talking about delayed flight and canceled flight, and I think they are not exactly the same. Delayed flight is the one the entity, the airline does not provide the same service as the airline promised, but canceled flight is the one that the airline does not provide any service. It's a new service at all. So a little bit different. And also in terms of the compensation, I think when there is a canceled flight, the compensation is going to be greater than the ticketed price. It is going to be negative in the revenue for the company. And negative revenue seems to be more like harms or damages, compensation for the harms and damages rather than kind of variable payment. So, you know, the more I think about this transaction, I mean, the agenda paper, the more questions I have, I come up with. So I'm not quite sure whether I can really support the agenda decision.
Tony?
So I'm comfortable with where the staff got to and pretty comfortable with the agenda decision. I think the way I've thought about it is both parties are aware of the law when they enter into the contract. So I agree with the staff's conclusion that the law becomes part of the contract. I think the airlines are at great pains to make sure that parties are aware of it. And the, where I draw the distinction between what's debit revenue and what's compensation for harm is, I think as Henry said, that the performance obligation is to deliver the customer from A to B within a specified window. And if the airline fails to do that, it hasn't delivered exactly what it promised, and it's required to pay a rebate, and it's effectively rebating because it didn't satisfy its performance obligation. If, on the other hand, the airline delivers me from A to B exactly as promised, but mows me down with a drinks trolley, and I've got a broken leg, that to me seems like something that is different. Or if the in-flight meal poisons me, that's where I would draw a distinction. I don't know, Henry or Petrina, if that's the way you would think about it. But that's...
With that example, you got the product, yeah, the service, yes, in that situation, and that's more equivalent to I sold Sue the television, she gets the television, the television then consequently does some harm to it, blows up.
Yeah, so I was comfortable, I could see how you draw,
yeah,
that distinction between the two situations.
And,
sorry, Henry.
No, I was just going to say, I think I appreciate the awkwardness that people are raising about the agenda decision, because primarily what we're saying is this relates to the performance obligation, mm-hmm, in the contract, and whether or not that's been satisfied or it's been satisfied to, you know, to the full specification of that performance obligation. The difficulty is then, of course, we're trying to say it's not the B33 and drawing that distinction, but actually fundamentally what we're saying is this is a variable consideration, it's a penalty, it's in the transaction price. But we were doing that thing to say it's not B33 because that was sort of some of the arguments that had come up in this particular context.
Yeah, so I'm comfortable. I think a bit like Bob, I'd be comfortable if we're explicit that we're not addressing, it's the net debit that we're not addressing.
Right.
So if the flight was cancelled and there is no revenue, but there's still compensation, there's a net debit. And I think what we're not addressing is what you do when there is a net debit. Is that...
That's better? What I was, yes. Yeah.
Bonnie.
Tony took what I was going to say, so thank you, Tony.
You go around the other way.
I know. I mean, frankly, before the last meeting, when my flight was delayed by about 24 hours, this is exactly how I was thinking about it, sadly. My accounting brain is always on, that I was trying to calculate, okay, what would have the revenue been, and what are they paying for in terms of things, you know, the piece. I don't think the U.S. has exactly the same rules as the EU in terms of compensation for delays, but I think the same concept exists. So I agree with Tony also on kind of where you draw the line between what's part of the revenue transaction and the delivery of the service versus something else, like a product liability type concept. So.
Andrew?
I also agree with the staff analysis and the tentative agenda decision. I think it quite properly keeps precisely to the submission and doesn't get into the other parts of things that airlines may give, where you might have to pay for something and claim it back, or the airline just gives you it directly and settles it directly. I don't want to get into that kind of complication. I think part of the discussion we're having maybe comes from the fact that it's a flat rate compensation, and the law doesn't say if you transport the passenger, but your plane goes after a particular time, you refund the ticket price. And that would be an easier one to say, well, that's non-33 because you're just reducing the transaction price to zero. And the reason why that's not done is just to simplify it. It's a flat rate so that people don't get into arguments over how much they're supposed to get back. It does mean that some of the budget airlines might have more of a net debit to deal with than some other ones, but that's how it is. But I don't think the fact that you have a flat rate then takes you into there's some kind of harm or damage. And I quite like Tony's distinction. And the next time I get clattered by a drinks trolley, I'll remember that one. I also agree that it's different when you've got a delay versus a cancellation, and this is purely to do with delays. So I'm happy with where we are. In terms of the wording that Carl suggested might be taken out, I'd be happy with that as well.
Michael?
Just listening to some of the discussion here, and I had a useful chat with Henry before the item. It does seem to me that the agenda decision might be slightly confusing in that I don't think the distinction is about compensation or not. The distinction is about whether you've received the service or not. Mm-hmm. So this is about you haven't received the service and the service you receive is a different service and you pay a different amount for it, in effect. Whereas the compensation and even a normal warranty, you've received something and it doesn't work or it does you some harm. So it's more kind of a past, future tense distinction rather than a harm, not harm distinction. So I wonder if that could be brought out more clearly in the agenda decision. And then one final, just a question, because it's something that Andrew and a couple of others have raised. So the delayed one, that makes perfect sense as an adjustment to the price. And without, this is not about whether it's negative or not, it's a different point, but if it's cancelled and you never deliver a service, is that still in 15 or not? Because the agenda decision or the question is delays or cancellations both. We're happy that both give you the same answer.
Well, at least I think you'd think about them in the same way, which is why we cover off both. It's just the difference is in a cancellation situation, it's almost like you're dealing with a balance sheet adjustment, at least initially, before thinking about what's left over. So my example is, let's assume you've paid 500 and in the case of a flight, you might have paid the 500 up front before the flight ever been delivered. So that'll be, you know, for the airline, debit cash. Credit a contract liability because they haven't yet performed, and it just so happens then that whenever, you know, if the flight ends up being cancelled, before you ever think about recognising that as revenue, you'll already, you know, make an adjustment. And obviously there would be no revenue in that case because, you know, there hasn't actually been a flight.
Guy?
I won't repeat what others have said about B33 and that distinction. I think I can wrap my head around the line that has been drawn in the analysis. I do want to pick up, though, on the cancellation, negative revenue type issue. I'm not quite sure what scenario we're talking about when we say cancellation. Are we talking about a scenario where there's a cancellation and no performance, period? Or are we talking about a cancellation of that flight, but the customer's rebooked on a different flight, such that there is ultimately performance? If we're talking about the former, and there's cancellation, no performance ever, I would have thought that means the customer is likely going to have a refund of their ticket price plus compensation. And so it by definition struck me that scenario is a negative revenue scenario by definition. And so even though we're intending not to answer that question, we seem to be answering that question if that's what we mean when we're referring to a cancellation scenario. If instead, you know, cancellation is potentially a cancellation and a rebooking, so there is performance, that's a bit different. But we seem to be responding to a negative revenue question here by just saying cancellation without expanding on what that means.
Likewise, I will be brief because the points I was going to make were covered by others. I agree with the staff analysis, and certainly the way I think of B33 is consistent with what the staff said and as Tony has articulated. And I also agree that it would be important to keep our agenda decision truthful to the submission, so not deal with reimbursement of expenses. I also, similarly, I noticed that we did not deal with the baggage claims, and I'm comfortable with not dealing with that because I think that can be a more complicated issue where there may be instances where the reimbursement is part of IS-30, is like a warranty type claim, a damage type claim. So I think in terms of keeping it narrow to the submitted question, I'm supportive of that.
Thank you. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an ambassador of the airline industry or so, but I thought, what is the average ticket price we have within Europe? And if you see and consider all the Ryanair's, Eurowings, or whatever, and what is the compensation? And I guess the compensation is €300, and the average ticket price might be lower. So it shows that it is more than just a refund of the ticket price, so to say. For what is it compensating for? As said, it's a kind of flat rate because you are checking late in at the hotel, so your hotel room is already given away. You have to use a taxi instead of a bus or whatever. So it's really for compensating harm. The majority might interpret that different. That could well be, but this is something I intend to address. And the second thing, and it probably be will might see that then from comment letters is I'm not sure what other industries are affected. So I know with regard to my electricity contract, I get a certain amount of money if I'm not provided with electricity because I've called shower then and so on. So I guess the topic is a little bit broader beside the question of negative revenue. So
I'm not as convinced as others might be that we're going to be able to differentiate harm from variable consideration. In the paper, the analysis, it was if my bags are harmed, that is a damage, that is variable consideration and not harm because there's a promise in the contract that they're going to transport my baggages without damage. So, but if I'm damaged, that's harm. So if there's turbulence on the plane, it damages my bag, that's variable consideration. But if it damages me and I'm hit by the trolley in the turbulence, you know, that's harm. I'm not sure we can deal with it. I think we're just going to have to leave some of this stuff up to judgment. And I think we help also by not dealing with the net debit, we mitigate some of the issues. So I'm okay with where we are, but I just wanted to point out, I think we're going to get comments back about how it's going to be difficult to differentiate between harm and variable consideration. The other thing I wanted to just come back to on the cancellations, I'm happy with where we are. I think there can be an argument being made that cancellations with no flight is different than a cancellation with, you know, yeah, I canceled that flight, but I flew you on another flight. But I'm not sure from a practical point, you know, that airlines are, it's useful for airlines to make those differentiations, and why not just treat them all as variable consideration at that point with the overlay of the net debit issue, not addressing the net debit.
Andrew?
Just two things quickly. Bob's articulation of the points in the baggage and it being damaged is why I think our agenda decision should keep well away from it. I think it just goes on flight. Just to pick up on Martin's point on compensation exceeding the ticket price, that might be if you book nicely in advance, but if you want to fly close to the time, the compensation payment is actually in many cases substantially less than the airline charges. And my understanding of the way it's worked is that it's just a flat rate compensation amount to stop people arguing all the time and cut down on the legal fees. So I don't see that as being determinative at all, that if you're clever and buy your tickets for €75, you get 300 back, so you're happy, or you might be.
less unhappy?
less unhappy than you might otherwise have been. I've been in that happy position myself. Versus someone who books at the last minute. I don't think it makes a difference to the accounting.
I would like to echo exactly the same I'm a little bit concerned if the negative revenue issue is not addressed, that for most of the compensation, the decision is not relevant. Because, as indicated by Andrew, in very many times, the compensation is above net revenue. Yeah. And we compare then the ticket price with the compensation, but we have to take out the taxes. So it's very important in our view that the negative situation is dealt with in the decision.
I mean, the reason if it's helpful, obviously it wasn't directly part of the question asked, and the reason that we haven't directly addressed it is not because we want to be unhelpful and just decide to not deal with things, to be unhelpful to the world. It's actually because we think that in the context of what we were asked, we could potentially be helpful, but we're not sure we can be helpful if we start to get into in terms of thinking about what we've got on IFRS 15 around this. So the reason we didn't address that is that we weren't certain there was something helpful that the committee could do in that respect, whereas we think that at least scoped as it is, which is the question in the submission, we could hopefully be helpful.
And Petrina, could I maybe just mention, my point was not so much about the negative part
yeah,
of it,
of course,
but it was
I
more
understand.
About the question of whether harm was caused or not.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I would actually prefer to steer away from dealing with a net negative, because I think it's just going to bring a lot of complexity that we can't deal with.
Yeah, I think it's a much broader question as well.
Yeah.
Sure. And no, we're not going to deal with the negative, but it would depend on unit of account, because there's many times that flying happens with no compensation. It just depends how you're going to group the contracts.
Okay, Petrina, do you want to go through... First of all, I'll ask you whether you agree with the staff's recommendation not to add it to the standard setting agenda. Then I'll hand over, assuming that goes well, I'll hand over to Petrina to talk about the wording changes you've heard to the agenda decision. So firstly, question two, does the committee agree with the staff's recommendation not to add the matter to your standard setting agenda?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
All right. Petrina, are you the person to go through those changes?
Sorry, Sue, before she does, could I just, thinking back on the other comments, and not trying to add guidance on additional fact patterns, but in order to avoid giving guidance on fact patterns we hadn't considered, I wanted to make a further wording suggestion in the first one, but it hadn't been put on the table. In paragraph A, sorry, on page 11, in the fact pattern described in the request, the last sentence, legislation stipulates the amount of compensation which is unrelated to the amount the customer pays for a flight. I think I would like to try and work in something about which is unrelated to the amounts the customer pays, including the amount for the flight. Because what I'm trying to signal is, if the legislation requires the airline to make payments to reimburse costs, you know, because the customer suffers harm. I'm not trying to say give guidance on that one. I'm just trying to say don't write this so broadly that it gives guidance, because the legislation may stipulate that an airline is required to reimburse up to 100 euros for a hotel if the customer, you know, incurs that cost because the flight has been delayed. And I think that may be something that arguably would be considered a call. I don't know, but I don't know. My sense was that we didn't intend to answer that the reimbursement of cost item.
Definitely not.
Okay, then I think the wording in A has to be tweaked slightly, so that, because very often legislation will stipulate the amount of compensation, which could be a fixed amount, and then up to X amounts reimbursement of actual costs the customer incurs.
Would it be helpful then, Mary, just if that first sentence, it was assuming based on the first sentence, but it just says the legislation stipulates the amount of compensation for delays and cancellations?
I'm not sure, because I think somebody could say the amount that you are entitled to be reimbursed for is part of the stipulation. I'm not sure that you have to have it now. I just think that you maybe need something to separate out the reimbursement for actual costs, which may be stipulated in the legislation, just so you don't, so that this doesn't answer that piece. But this is where I'm editorializing wildly. I disagree with what was implicit in Martin's comment, that if those who passed the legislation said it is our intent in passing this legislation to reimburse people for costs, I think that's different. I was trying to differentiate the ones where it's an actual reimbursement. So I'm not trying to get you to do it on the fly. I can't do it on the fly, but just note that first one needs tweaking the scopes.
Okay, Katrina, do you want to go through what you've heard?
Sure. So what I've heard is, so we've got something that Mary's just mentioned that we don't know the exact words, but we'll look at that bullet A description. The other point that I've heard is to make it clear in the agenda decision. At the minute, I'm thinking it'll fit better closer to the end around the conclusion, but to make it clear that the committee didn't consider the question of whether the amount of compensation recognised as a reduction of revenue is limited. To making the transaction price nil, so using the words in the paper, effectively the negative revenue question, so we'll make that clear. The other point I heard raised by one or two is at I'm on page 12 and at the end of the first paragraph, whether we keep the sort of link to considering this in the same way as penalties for construction services. I heard some say that they thought that was unhelpful. We initially put it in there because we thought it might be helpful in explaining how we were viewing this compensation, but it's not essential that it needs to stay, so maybe it's an open question whether people think they preferred with that sort of analogy to penalties or not.
If you wanted to keep it, it might be less concerning for those. If you say, in the same way that illustrative example, I think it's 20, shows IE 20, example IE example 20 illustrates a penalty in construction services, because I think that's why you picked that example, because that is the IE that's in the standard. So if you just put it in there.
All right, so with those tweaks, could I get a show of hands for who supports the tentative agenda decision, please?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Okay. It's mentioned in the paper.
Just reading the what an alien paragraph.